Elizabeth Lindholm Betts. I, along with 39 other young adults and five staff people, came up here 20 years ago to this ghost town. In the early spring, publicity was sent out advertising the need for volunteer workers for the project of beginning to clean up this mountain village that had been given to the Lutheran Church about a year before. The ad read like this: any young men or women interested in getting in on such a meaningful project should contact the youth office right away for further details. Participants should be at least 18 years of age. The plans called for 40 work campers, 20 from the new American Lutheran Church and 20 from the former Augustana. Gil Berg, a businessman from Seattle, was the first director. Dr. Wilton Bergstrand, youth director of the Augustana Lutheran Church, was the program director. And Dr. Laris from Pacific Lutheran University was the naturalist. We chose the name Forerunners for two reasons. First, during our month's stay, we studied intensively the life of John the Baptist, who was the forerunner for Christ. Secondly, we were called forerunners for what Holden was to become. Many days we brainstormed as to what we thought Holden should become. Some have come true, but for the other parts of Holden today, perhaps our visions were too narrow. It is a thrill for all of us to be here after 20 years to see how it has developed and to participate in Holden's present program. Through slides, we would like to tell you about that month, June 15th through July 15th, 20 years ago. Our mayor, Gil Berg, will narrate the various, with the slides with various forerunners, adding additional memories.
I guess I've got control of the lights here. I didn't know that. Before we show this first picture, I want to tell you that I have a memory bank filled with memories of what the forerunners accomplished in this village. Today I've been reading the log that they left behind. I really didn't need to do this because I have a very vivid memory of what they did and what kind of characters they were. And they really were characters. Okay, let's have our first film, shall we? Whoa. Forward. There, that's number one. On June the 14th, the forerunners converged on the city of Chelan. They arrived there during the day, and I met them there. And we met at the Little Lutheran Church. And if you ever drive through Chelan, you should see that little church. It's not very big, but it has, it's one of the places that are quite important in the history of Holden Village. Now this is, I don't think they're all there, and I'm not going to try to identify all of them, but Dr. Bergstrand and Dolores Bergstrand had come from Minneapolis to be their spiritual leader during this month that they were assigned to be at Holden Village. It was quite an experience to meet with these young people. The people of the church there, provided a very fine picnic supper for us out on one of the orchards. And afterwards, we met at this little church. And Dr. Bergstrand, first of all, introduced the subject of Holden Village to these young people. And I followed up and told them what they could expect when they reached the village. This, it was taken on June the 15th, the morning of June 15th. And we are here seated on the Lady of the Lake on the way to Luzerne. That was quite a memorable occasion for these young people. Many of them had never seen a mountain before, and never had they been on a lake as deep as this one. You know, Lake Chelan is 1,500 feet deep. And that's Dr. Bergstrand, isn't it? Right there in the center. Very important man in the early development years of Holden Village. This shows the landing of the crew on the Holden Village dock. The truck that you see there on the left was the first truck owned by Holden Village. It's called Number One, and it still is in service here in the village. And someday I trust they'll put that in a museum. It is that precious to those of us that came in here those early years. And that was the only means of transportation that we had at that time. You'll notice that it had these sideboards on it, and we could haul up to 75 passengers on that bus at that time. This was taken about 3 days after our arrival in the village. This is a group from the Augustana Church, which had just completed a national convention in Seattle. These people came to the village and were very much thrilled with it. And after leaving the village, they did a great deal to promote Holden Village for us. And the forerunners entertained these people. They did the cooking and the washing and entertained them the day that they were here. And you can see that we had sunshine then. And I would like to say something about the sunshine we had during that month. I think we had one day like today. It rained all day, and the forerunners crawled into their sleeping bags and slept most of the day. There was nothing we could do out of doors. Otherwise, I think we had sunshine every day that they were here, from June 15th to July 15th. The forerunners came in the other day on the 15th, exactly 20 years after they had come in the first time. Whoa, wrong button. One of the first things we did in the village was to try to clean it up. They had instructions to, first of all, just broom clean the village. The dormitories and the chalets, the hotel, and all the buildings were filled with junk that had been left behind, and we hauled truckloads of trash up to the burner that is up at the mine level. This is, I think, Liz Lundholm cleaning one of the windows, and you can see how dirty they were. It looks like that was a missing pane there, but it isn't. It's just a clean window. You know that we replaced 800 panes of glass in the village that first year I was here. These are two of the forerunners. I'll not name them all, But they were in the process there of cleaning up one of the chalets. Our first objective was to clean the chalets in the village. This is Marie Krell. She was one of the two nurses that came in that group. She too, we put her to work. There wasn't any sickness. There were no injuries at that time, so we put her to work cleaning, as most of us were engaged. She was the only one from Canada in that group. And here's Liz Lundholm. She's with us tonight. And she too was working in the cleaning process. There's another one. Busy. Here we took out all the mattresses from dorm two and aired them out. And I wish you could have been here at that time to have seen the filthy condition of the dormitories, as all the buildings were. You can just guess what we were doing there. We had to do all the washing in these kinds of washing tubs, and we had to heat the water over bonfires. There was no water, no hot water in the village. There was no electricity, and there were no toilets that were working when on the day of their arrival. And there were a lot of other things that they were accustomed to that were missing. These are the Hulkanen twins from Michigan. We call them the Twin Finns because they were from a Finnish community in Michigan. Now they tell me this is a picture of the process of cleaning out the hotel kitchen. I would say that the hotel kitchen was probably the filthiest place in the village. The accumulation of dust fall that had accumulated over 3 years, together with the impacted grease, a leaky roof caused by the falling of the big chimney and all, made it a very stinky place. But we were up to it. I think it took us something like 4 or 5 days just to clean out the area right around the two huge oil-burning ranges. Spick and span was a popular item in those days. I understand that you still can buy spick and span after 20 years. This looks like Sylvia Woodgeman and Toby. Toby is the one that was instrumental in composing the work song, "A Love to Work Among the Pines." You still have that in your songbook after these 20 years. This is the hotel. You know, up here in this wilderness, it snows a great deal. Sometimes the snow can be 8-10 feet deep. And the buildings are constructed so that they shed snow naturally. But behind the chimneys, over the years, it had required that people would shovel away the snow. And during the 3 years of abandonment, the snow had piled up behind that big hotel chimney and caused it to fall. And when we came here in 1960, all those bricks were laying on the north side of the hotel. We had to clean up that brick, and Ken Barrett was the foreman on that job. He was one of the older forerunners, a wonderful worker, a stonemason by trade, and with the help of three or four others that were on his team, they accomplished that. And I see that the chimney is standing just as like it was 20 years ago. That was really one of the major accomplishments of the forerunners. There's another picture. You can see how blue the sky was. And that's the kind of sunshine we had every day. I'm surprised at the bad weather we've had this week. But I'm not going to apologize for it. Sometimes I think there are too many people that come here to the village. And maybe if it rained like this all the time, it would reduce the number that come. Huh? Another picture. And you can see Copper Mountain there in the background. It's quite a nice picture, I would say. Liz, can you tell me what this is?
One of the first jobs that the Bonanza Bruisers had to do, we were divided into four different groups, and our group was called the Bonanza Bruisers, and Gil said, go out and clear the fire trail behind the village. So there were a lot of fallen logs along the trail, and so the fellows started with the two-man crosscut, and they challenged us to do the same, and here we are trying our hand at sawing and clearing the trail.
There must have been at least 20 or 30 trees that had fallen over the fire road that circles the village. And that was one of the first requirements of the Forest Service, that be cleaned out. And shortly after we cleaned that out, the two nurses put on a program one afternoon, and Marie Krill, the nurse from Canada, said she would like to tell the foreigners about the danger of snake bite. And so she gave us a long lecture on the dangerous aspects of snake bite. And when she was finished, I told her that there were no venomous snakes in this area whatsoever. You might find an occasional bull snake. But she had come from Canada where rattlesnakes were quite prevalent. Well, some of our foreigners took that very seriously, especially Dolores Bergstrand. She walked down the fire road in a hurry one afternoon, and all of a sudden she saw a piece of electrical wire in the grass, and she thought, sure, it was a snake. Well, she just took off, and when she landed, she had a sprained ankle, and she spent 2 days in bed on account of it. Wait a minute. Here's us, the same crew working on one of the other logs. Some of them were quite large, and of course we had to have an awful lot of stove wood at that time. All the water had to be heated on a bonfire. And over a bonfire. And so it took a great many cords of wood to keep us in hot water for bathing and for washing dishes and cooking. Another one on the same project. Sylvia, would you tell us about Jim Felton? He was our truck driver at that time.
Jim Felton soon proved that he could maneuver that truck down to the lake and back in great style. And so he was the driver every day to go down to meet the boat. And as he recalled to us in a letter, which we read last night to our group, that at a certain turn in the switchbacks, Gil would always whistle him to a stop so that the people could turn around and enjoy the beautiful view. So we think of Jim. He's not here with us, but we think of him.
He was a farm boy from Minnesota, as I remember it. A very fine young man. This is a picture of the barge that plies Lake Chelan once a week. And it was at that time delivering the two diesel units that are now installed in the diesel generator house just about a quarter of a mile up the road. That was one of the projects of the forerunners, was to bring those into the village to build a building for housing them and putting them in place.
This was quite a project to get these diesel generators off of the truck. It was no project at all to load them on the truck with this big crane that was on the loading dock down at Lucerne. And so the crane lifted them off the barge and set them on our truck. And these generators weighed about 3.5 tons. And as we went up the switchbacks with these one unit on each load, there were a few times where the guys had to jump off the truck and help push to get around the curves. It was about a 2.5 hour ride from Lucerne up to the village with one of these. Next. Here shows setting it onto the truck down at the dock at Lucerne.
On the right there, you'll see a picture of Oscar Getty, the packer who lived at Lucerne at that time. He has meant a great deal to the Holden Venture in the early days.
This shows a picture of taking the unit off the truck. We never had no crane, no tractor with a loader on or anything when we got to the village. Now you see the slab of cement underneath these. One of our first jobs here was to clear out this area, level it off, pour this cement slab, put the bolts down, and then take the generators off the truck. The biggest problem was after we got them off the truck was lifting them up and setting them over the bolts. And so we get the holes lined up and setting them down, 3.5 tons.
We bought these generators in Seattle sometime before the foreigners came to the village, and we paid $5,000 for them. We had to borrow the money to buy them, and one of them had 4 hours of use on it. The other one had none whatsoever. They had come from Alaska, where they had been auxiliary units in some fish packing operation. Oh, we thought we had gotten a very good buy, and this is what we had in the way of generating electricity later on that summer. Another picture of this crew that accomplished that.
Now, as I said, we needed to make a place for these, and so then after we got them set in, we were looking someplace for some lumber to build a house over the top. So up on top the tailings piles we went to tear down the derricks that held these big pipes that the water came out of from the mine building. See, the water carried the yellow tailings suspended in the water, and as the water ran off down the creek, the tailings were left. So we tore down these big derricks, and then we threw this lumber down the side of the pile. That'd be on the next picture. And carried them across Railroad Creek to the road and loaded them on the truck, took them back to the generators and built the house over the top.
On the right there, you'll see Railroad Creek. They had to throw the lumber down to the bottom and then carry it across a footbridge over to the highway. This is a picture of Copper Creek, taken at Copper Basin. This is a source for our drinking water in the village and also a source of power for the hydro units. It's a very sweet stream, beautiful water, beautifully clear and cool. I remember one time we took a group of people to the water intake, and amongst the people that were on that tour, there was a young pastor from North Dakota. I'll never forget this fellow. He rushed by me and jumped into the stream and laid right down on his belly and drank a fill of that beautiful water, and he was covered from top to bottom by a Copper Creek. I'd never seen a man do that before, and he said he had been dreaming all his life of a stream like that. He had never in all his life seen something that flowed as clear and sweet as Copper Creek. Who wants to say something about the road crew?
On the road up from Lucerne, there were, on our first trip up, there were a lot of rock to be taken care of, to be rolled off the road, and this is just one of many big ones this side that had fallen down the mountainside and landed and stayed on the road. And so this was a big part of our work.
You can just imagine that during 3 years of no use, that road was covered with boulders of many sizes. Many times we'd have to stop the buses and the trucks to roll the rocks away. And the ditches, too, were full of rocks.
I remember Gil gave us rakes and said, go rake the road and move all the rocks away. And when we got there, this was the size of the rocks.
Well, they had some very cute names for me in those days.
The next picture Gil shows us throwing the rock across the side. And then the next one shows how a person who doesn't have as much strength or maybe as much energy gets rid of the rocks on the road.
I remember that work assignment. We would take the crew that was assigned that job. We'd take them down several different mornings. They'd take some lunch with them and some coffee break material, and we'd let them off, and at the end of the day they would mark the place where they left off. It was a great experience for these flatlanders from Minnesota and other Midwest flatlands. How about Sonia, you want to say something about how we did our cooking in those days?
This plain old KP. It's hard for me to tell from the picture what we're preparing, but I remember that we all helped with the cooking. We have Bertha's with us this week, and Bertha was our cook, did all the planning and the main cooking, but we helped with peeling, and it looks like that's what we're doing there, helping her with the vegetables, peeling things and cutting things up.
It might be interesting to you to know that our refrigeration system consisted of cold water from Railroad Creek, which was piped up into the small swimming pool, it's like a child's pool, behind the Gilberg Chalet by the house that was burned. And we kept all of our refrigerated things in that cold water. We even made jello in it, so it was cold.
You should add that all the food was stored in garbage cans set in the middle of that pool.
All of our meals were prepared either on a small cook stove inside of Chalet 1 or on the fireplace out behind Chalet 1.
What time did we have breakfast in those days?
Breakfast was at 6 o'clock, but we all got up at 5:30 and we had our morning devotions at 5:45. We ate at 6 o'clock. We started working at 6:30 and worked till 9:30, had a break, and worked until 12:30. This shows a picture of one of our break times. It's out behind Chalet 1.
Who would like to say something about our chief cook in those days? Liz?
I never was in the kitchen. I was on the eating end. And what I can say about our cook was that she was a good one. We had delicious meals. Perhaps you think that with working as hard as we did that we'd have liked anything we had, but I think that there's nothing better than Bertha's lefse and donuts and all sorts of good things. We didn't have just sweets. I just remember them the best. We had good, nutritious meals.
I want to say that Bertha Pearson, who sits right there, was our cook for 3 years. And I think she is one of the real heroes of the Holden story. Really, she was.
I'd just like to say that Bertha was a real strong person, and she sure is yet today, because yesterday on our hike, she hiked with us all the way to Heart Lake and back at the age of 75 years old.
And I want to tell you this, back that time, our policy was to feed as though they were loggers and farmers. We used a lot of meat and potatoes and vegetables and lots of fruit. And I'm telling you that these people really kept us broke eating. They were from, many of them were from farms, and they were young, they were strong, and they worked hard, they played hard. They hiked hard, and everything they did was hard work. And I'm telling you, they had a real appetite. I think here they are preparing some coffee for a hike. Isn't that right?
This is breakfast, I think, at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was very cold. We started out like 40 degrees, then 38, and one morning it was down to 32 degrees. So you can see why people have hands in their pockets and they're eagerly eating their cereal and coffee.
One of the things they had to learn in the mornings was to eat their breakfast with their hands in their pockets and while they were dancing around the fire. Who wants to say something about building a trail to Copper Creek Falls?
It's already on. This was building and clearing the trail to up to Copper Creek Falls. And it was removing brush. There were huge stones in the road and logs across it, and making it easier for people to travel up there to see the intake. Part of the where the water comes in, where you go today.
I remember this was done, I think, the day before they left camp. And at the end of the day's work, we sat down in a very nice place there, and we had a little prayer meeting, praying that the people that would follow these people would be blessed by walking up the trail that they had built. Well, I don't know who this is, but doesn't it make you cold just to look at it?
After all of our working, you see, we had to clean up, but we had no hot water. But this brave person decided to take a bath and wash your hair in Railroad Creek. Now, the next picture will show how the fellows got themselves clean.
There was no such thing as shower baths in those days. Here is something that is of very great interest. Before the forerunners left, they took up a collection one day, and it was enough in that collection to buy this little portable generator. It was just about enough to provide electric lights in one of the chalets. And of course, these versatile people, they took it up to these old wash machines somewhere up on the cul-de-sac and did their washing up there. They found these abandoned wash machines and they hooked them up and washed their clothes. That provided the first electric light in the village after 3 years.
I wrote this letter home on June 18th, 1961.
Yeah, okay.
We work up here, like I mean work. When the work is done, we have some free time in which we can prepare devotions for the evening, plan meals, plan our recreation, gather flowers for the altar, or make altar cloths out of bed sheets and green crayons. Or we can wash dishes or practice a trio for the morning service. Now it is our day of rest, though. The trio just finished. I sang with a cold, and we had to start twice because I didn't get my pitch. But from then on, it was nice, and people said that it was worth waiting for. The nicer ones said this anyway. Oh, well. I led the devotions last night after we had come out of the mine. You'd have loved this, Daddy. It was a little damp and dark in there. Anyway, the devotions came out fine, so maybe that compensates for the trio. Also, I drew a Cairo on the altar cloth, and one of the other members of the Bonanza Bruisers made an Alpha and Omega symbol on either side out of greenery, and it came out very nice. By the way, the Bonanza Bruisers is the temporary name of our work unit. Bonanza Peak looms right over Holden, and our unit has the biggest kids in camp. I'm the third smallest person, so you can imagine. We decided to keep the name secret until we find out what other groups have decided to call themselves. Perhaps the BBs would not be in good taste if others call themselves God's Little Helpers or something. I live in the hospital, and my room is right next to the nurses' quarters. I have a balcony right off my room where four of us are now sitting. I'm in the lounge chair, a dentist chair with a headrest. These buildings are so neat, unlike a camp. I can't adequately describe them. We have a parlor and a kitchen with stove, refrigerator, sink, etc. Of course, we don't have any running water. There are four useless toilets in the hospital, too. The two buildings next to us have plumbing now, so it's not too long a jaunt. I have a washbowl and a pitcher in my room. I feel so primitive. There is no electricity in camp at all. We just go to bed when it gets dark. Heat water over a wood stove for dishwater, cook over an outdoor stove for breakfast and a wood stove for one other hot meal a day, usually at noon. It's 5 now on Monday, because I got sidetracked yesterday. Not by work, I confess, but by an invitation to go on a hike. So I left your letter and went on 2 hikes, one in each direction from camp. Boy, you were sure right about the shoes. In fact, much of the brush around here is too thick to hike through at all without a long knife, but we did it. I think I'm going to feel it today. Well, it's time to run for water. This is our only kind of running water at the hospital, that which we run and get. Breakfast is at 5:45. Take good care of Mama. Thanks for the $2. It helped to pay the $3.50 boat fare. I didn't know about that. I don't need any more now. There's nothing to buy. Love, Sonia.
Bob, you want to say something about the fire department?
I think I'll let Liz take that.
As soon as we came into the village, the fellows were briefed on how to fight a fire, because fire is very important as it is today. But it was decided, here's a picture of our fire chief and assistant fire chief, but it was decided that the girls better take some lessons on firefighting in case the fellows were out of the village when a fire was detected. So we started having a practice. If you want to move on to the next one. In this one, a funny incident happened. I was at the head of the line, and what we had to do was first to couple up all of the hoses, and then we had to put a nozzle on the front, and then send word back to the hydrant that we were all ready to go. Well, we started, and the nozzle fell off, and we all got soaked. And Gil said, Liz, you put it on wrong. I said, I don't think so. He said, well, I'll show you how to do it. So the water was turned off by this time, and Gil securely put the nozzle on. We sent word back to the hydrant, we're ready to go again, and the water came out with great force, and off came the nozzle again. I said, I proved to you, Gil, I was not wrong. We finally got a new nozzle and everything went all right, and we put out our pretend fire with a bunch of laughing fellows around giving us a lot of encouragement. But it was a whole lot of fun, but we were certainly thankful it was not a serious fire, because then it would not be funny.
Might interest you to know it took about a half a dozen women to hold one nozzle. The pressure was that great. Notice the yards there. That's the way we found them in 1960 and 61. Sonia?
As we cleaned the various buildings and went through the things that we found there, we just clowned around and had a lot of fun, even though we were working hard. And when we cleaned out this, right behind me, the stage area, we found costumes and sets, because the people here entertained themselves. They lived here all year round, and Santa Claus must have visited every December, because there was a Santa Claus suit. So I'm here with a pillow over my belly and just, I guess, entertaining some villagers.
There's a picture of Dr. Bergstrand in his daily study. You notice there how the growth that surrounded the buildings after 3 years of desertion. Melba, you want to talk about this one?
We had daily Bible studies that were an hour long, and they were with Dr. Bergstrand, and a group would plan this. One of the sections would be assigned this to help plan for the Bible studies that were held every day. At one time, while we held a 24-hour prayer vigil for the future of Holden Village, and at that time the Augustana Church was merging, and it was for the youth department and Holden Village and for that future. This is the Bible study that was held up on Martin Ridge. We climbed almost to the top, and then we had a Bible study up there with Dr. Bergstrand. This is Dennis Mattson was our liturgist, and Jim Weiberg was our preacher. And that's one of the offerings that we made. It's on now.
This is a picture of the village taken from Copper Basin. If you ever have the legs and the opportunity to hike up there, you'll find a very lovely place. And this is the source of our water. Copper Creek has its beginnings in this beautiful valley, in quite a good-sized snowbank up there. It's almost a glacier. One of the boys climbed up there. In fact, I think the whole group hiked up there one day while they were here. This is house one. And there you'll notice how the yard had been trampled and hadn't been watered for all those years. And it was really in a sad shape. But that chalet has some very wonderful memories attached. There's a picture of the miners' village. And if you have a chance while you're here, you should walk up to the road and see what's left of it. These buildings were all burned down in 1962, in October of that year. I have pictures of that burning.
Many people ask us why they were destroyed. But when we went in there and rummaged around, walked through them, many of the floors were caving in. You had to watch every step you took because boards would give way under your feet, and if you weren't careful, you'd land in the basement. And many of the roofs were in because of this heavy snows. So the buildings were no longer usable. The next slide shows something interesting. Here we see before the village was burned. This was the miners' village. You can still see the steps and some of the foundations. And this is just as you're coming up to the first street. Now we're going to see a picture taken after the burning, an after shot.
There's also a good picture of Mount Bonanza. It stands there about 9,600 feet high. And of course, you haven't been able to see it this week hardly.
This is the same spot, you see the same wall with the house gone. Now in the next picture is one of the streets. You can see a swing set on the left. Very charming homes. The next shot shows after.
The Forest Service wanted us to take this village over too at the time we took over the main village. But we determined that it wasn't feasible to restore this village and maintain it. It would be just beyond our means and our whatever it took to do it.
Same street afterward.
Bob, you want to say something about the footbridge?
This is the old footbridge, which now has been replaced by the new one. This is where you go across Railroad Creek down towards the mine area.
At that time, the footbridge was a covered bridge. And Dumbbell Peak in the background. This is the way the mine, the mill buildings looked at the time they were here. It was really a sad situation. There's another shot with Copper Mountain in the background. Within that mountain, there are about 55 miles of tunnels at different levels. This is the site that we saw when we came here in 1960 and 61. They were salvaging as much of the steel as possible at that time, and they left an awful lot of debris everywhere. We hauled out hundreds of truckloads of lumber and ties and broken material of all kinds and had to burn them. It might surprise you to know that Holden Village is on the edge of an avalanche area. This building stood while we were here in 1960. This was taken a year or two later. In the meantime, an avalanche had come into the edge of the village and destroyed the old fire station. In that station, we found an old fire truck and a lot of fire equipment. We also lost a garage at that time, and that is only a few hundred feet from here. Bob, you want to say something about our trip into the mine?
I decided I should do it. One of the first nights that we were here, one of the engineers from the mine that had been here in 57 decided to take us on a trip into the mine. And I understand we are one of the very few people that has been into the mine the last 20 years. In fact, it was closed up shortly afterwards. He led us in there. We equipped ourselves with rain gear and flashlights and walked in, he told us, nearly a mile, 5,000 feet. And when we got in there, he pointed out an area that was, he said, as large as 10 football fields the size of Michigan State. Also, he took a stone and he dropped down the main shaft, and we counted 23 seconds before it splashed. And see, so the shaft seemed pretty deep to us, and that was right in front of us. We could not see a thing. It was a sort of an eerie experience trudging through ankle-deep water. We spent an hour and a half in the mine, and after that, Gil tells us it was closed up and nobody has been in there since.
while we were in the mine, the miner said, let's see what gross darkness is like. So he turned out all the lights, and we saw gross darkness. And while we were there, someone said, let's sing a hymn. And one of the girls in a very frightened voice said, let's sing I Will Not Be Afraid.
They just have a few shots of what mine entrance looked like at that time.
See one of the mine cars that had been used for hauling out ore. They were using it at that time to haul out the rails that were in the mine. Another picture of the mine portal. I think we're showing this to show you how ragged the yards looked at that time. This is taken, what is that, dorm two? And you see, compare that with the way it looks today, and there's quite a change, isn't there? This is the hospital, and the way we found it in 1961. This is a picture of chalet number two, which doesn't stand there anymore. It was burned down several years after we left here. I've never really learned the cause of that fire, but this was a beautiful cottage, one of my favorite chalets, in fact. Now, someone has to explain this one.
Well, a funeral is about to take place here. These are only part of what we fed into this fire. These are the clothes that we wore out while we were here in a month. And I think we added about that amount additional before we set it all on fire and said goodbye to our work clothes that we had completely gone through that weren't worth anything anymore. Shows some of the work that we did. We wore right through our clothes and shoes.
They're trying to make you believe that they worked awfully hard.
This was up on Cloudy Pass. I don't know how many of you, probably nobody's been up there yet this year, which is about, 10, 12 miles from the village. This was on the 4th of July, 1961. We were having our noon lunch.
So it was an overnight hike, wasn't it?
Right.
Well, this is Image Lake and Glacier Peak. And if you ever want to see something most beautiful, you want to hike up there. It's the only way you can get there. I had the privilege of going up there one time, and I don't think I've ever seen anything that equals it. And that's about, it's 10 miles to Cloudy Pass, and I'd say Image Lake is another 5 miles.
No, it's about 40 miles round trip.
This is the way Holden Village has looked some of the years during midwinter. I understand that the last few years, the snowfall hasn't been all that great. This was taken sometime during the time that the House on people were here. I can remember this picture was taken by an engineer that had lived there. And you can see the tremendous weight of the snow that would burden an ordinary building and crush it. But these buildings are so completely well constructed that they will withstand the pressures of the deepest snowfall. Many times the people had to tunnel their ways into their homes during the years previous to our coming. Whoop. I think I missed one there. Yes, that's another winter picture of Dumbbell and the village in midwinter. Isn't that beautiful? How about it, Bob or someone? You want to say something about this?
We dressed up one day in a month. This was our church service, and we all decided to have our picture taken looking fairly good. We felt a little strange, though, to be so dressed up. And this was the day that we left the group, and when we had to say goodbye to one another. We had certainly developed a close bond of friendship between one another, and I don't know if there is any other group that worked together at Holden Village that have come back for reunions, but maybe it was the month that we stayed together and we worked so intensively together that helped to cement this bond of friendship between us.
The youngest group of the forerunners was Daniel Lohman, my grandson. He stands there in the middle. He was the mascot at that time. Liz, you want to say something about Dr. Bergstrand?
We have a few pictures here to show you who our staff was. This is Dr. Bergstrand and their two children, Paul and John. He was certainly an inspiration to all of us during the month.
I think Dr. Bergstrand and his wife did more to promote Holden Village than almost any other person.
These were our two nurses. And Bertha, our cook, and her helper, a dietitian.
She was from Texas.
The dietitian,
yeah. A very fine girl and very devoted to the work that she had to do with Mrs. Pearson.
And here was Reuben. And the favorite dog, Bugger.
I could tell you a long story about Reuben. Reuben came here about the 15th of May in 1961. He was the lone person in the village the first 2 years of the Holden operation. We locked up the village, and he and his dog, Bugger, were the only occupants. Reuben is still living. He's an alcoholic. We brought him up here knowing that he was an alcoholic, and all the while he was here for 3 years, he didn't touch a drop of alcohol. But one day, someone came into the village and tempted him, and he fell. And today, he is most helpless, and we feel badly about Reuben. Bugger was the village dog, a beautiful dog. He was just a pup when we brought him up here, and he lived to be about 10 years old. Well, will somebody say
yeah. And this was our mayor, Gilberg, and he is certainly the one that I believe should be remembered in the very early days of Holden Village. He did an awful lot to get things organized and started before we even came to Holden, organized the work so that many, many things got done. We got a list of 52 items that were done during that month, and it was through his organization and his support and his enthusiasm and the being right behind us all the time so we wouldn't slack on our work that we got these things done. And we certainly, as a group of forerunners, wanted to give a lot of tribute to Gil for what he did to get Holden Village started.
Very presently, we will ask for your questions if you have any. First of all, when our time at Holden was over, we sat down to evaluate our experience here and to put in writing some of our dreams for Holden's future. One of our group wrote this: "I believe Holden can truly unite Lutherans. Here we can share our opinions through study, discussion, and activities, thus broadening our scope of knowledge and understanding through fine programming. I think stimulating Bible searching and discussion should always be a part of the life here. Through all the trials of organization and planning, our dedication to Christ stands as the purpose of it all. I think every person who comes to Holden Village should leave with this fact uppermost in their mind." Now, get this prophetic statement from 20 years ago. I strongly approve of the idea of a minimum amount of electricity in hopes of keeping life here as simple as possible. I would like to see Holden Village as a place apart where young Christians can come together to get to know each other, thus creating a unique fellowship and making Christian growth a primary objective. As we see this week what Holden has become, we are thrilled and amazed at what has far exceeded our dreams. To God be the glory.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sure that's...